I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Tim Hale. He is Cabinet Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, ma'am. It's good to be here.
And Rick Iannucci and Nancy DeSantis, they are founders and directors of Horses for Heroes, which can be found on the web at horsesforheroes.org, here in New Mexico, and directors of the Cowboy Up program. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
Nice to be here.
So let's talk about the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. What are you facing right now after, what, about a decade of United States
Absolutely.
War?
Absolutely. You know, that's one of the biggest issues we look at every day is the number of veterans who are getting ready to come home. You know, here in New Mexico, you know, we're blessed in that we have a very, very large veteran population. We have a lot of veterans, you know, from every village, every tribe, the New Mexico National Guard, great, great heritage of military service here in New Mexico. Because of that heritage of military service, so many of our young people in New Mexico join the military, whether it's in the National Guard, the Reserves, or the active duty. And obviously, we hope that they come home to New Mexico to, you know, plug back into their lives, etc. The New Mexico Guardsmen are a particular concern for us that we take a good hard look at. For instance, right now we've got a battalion of the MH6 or the UH-60 battalion is over in Iraq and Afghanistan right now doing what they call dust-off missions. Those are the ones that go in and bring out the wounded, etc. Those troops will be coming home in the spring. There are almost 400 New Mexico National Guardsmen in Kosovo, you know, in a conflict and in a, you know, peacekeeping role that has been going on for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
All those forces will be coming home sometime within the next year. Obviously, there's lots of press right now about what's going on in Iraq and the drawdowns there. Well, that drawdown, you know, started months ago, will come to somewhat of a conclusion in December. All those troops who come home, they won't immediately just hit the streets of America. As you go through and you take a look at what's going on with the different budget processes and everything in Washington, D.C., you see that it takes a while. So, you know, when everybody says all the troops are coming home in December, what are we going to do? Not exactly true, because there are what they call demobilization processes, those sorts of things to help start getting the veterans reintegrated back into life. So bottom line is sometime in the spring of this year, we'll start seeing the number of veterans in New Mexico will probably start going up. And then if you start...
Like 6 months from now.
Right, 6 months or so from now. And then if the automatic cuts that everybody's talking about with the military, if that leads to drawdowns in personnel, if personnel are released from the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marines, then it's about 3 or 4 months after that's announced, you'll start seeing those kind of troops start to come home. And what we do at the Department of Veterans Services is we try and help all those veterans plug into a lot of the programs that are already out there through the Veterans Administration, through the state of New Mexico, and through the nonprofit organizations like Horses for Heroes,
right,
so that they can find, you know, the avenues they need to find their new normal. Because going from a uniform to back to the civilian world, especially the issue like you talked about, 10 years in the global war on terror, we have troops that were, you know, 16, 17 years old when the Twin Towers were hit. They immediately went down to sign up to serve our country. A lot of them are now getting out. They're in that critical age group of 24 to 29 years old, and they're leaving the military. They've got lots of experience, but they've never worked in the civilian sector.
Right, exactly. So, and, I mean, if I may say, I mean, there are certainly people who signed up with great ideals and signed up because that was their family tradition, but there's also a lot of people signed up who were poor and they didn't have a whole lot of options, and the lives they came from weren't so great to begin with.
Right.
And going back into that is not the world's right. greatest option.
And again, much like, you know, our parents and our grandparents, at the end of the Depression going into World War II, you know, they will come out of that with a lot of experience. And they want to bring those experiences from the military back home to America, they want to reintegrate back into their communities and be able to use some of those. But not all the skills, obviously, you learn in the military are easily translated into a civilian job. What is translated is discipline, willingness to work, ability to follow orders, ability to make decisions that a lot of businesses and a lot of workplaces are really looking for constantly. So, you know, what we need to do is take those skills and then hone them with, you know, either a technical skill or get them back into the educational system with the modern GI Bill, which is better than what our grandparents had and our parents had coming out of World War II. Because they get both the school paid for and they get housing paid for. There are a lot of great things. They pay for on-the-job training programs. They pay for a lot of different things. So what we try and do is help the veteran, you know, man, woman, no matter where they came from, get plugged back in and use all those benefits that are available for them out there. But sometimes they get overwhelmed when they come out and they make that transition from the military to the civilian world. So we're there to help them not be so overwhelmed.
Well, part of it, and this is what you, Ricky and Nucci, are dealing with, is this issue of trauma. I mean, there are people who come back and either they've been injured or they've seen things that are horrible or their buddies have been blown up in mm-hmm. front of their faces or they've killed people in ways that are hard to even think about. And that's something that, with all the other skills and discipline, which are real and valid, is very hard to overcome.
It is. It is. And that's why, again, you know, programs like Horses for Heroes, you know, a number of different groups around the state, you know, both through the VA and non-Veterans Administration groups are all, you know, focusing on helping those veterans find their way. As you said, you know, most anyone who's seen combat in some sort and, you know, We've experienced it for a long time in the civilian community with law enforcement. Again, Rick's very familiar with what happens on a day-to-day, night-to-night basis on the streets of Santa Fe. You know, our police officers and our law enforcement people have very many of the same issues. Well, they're in a long-term program that they are worked with every day. When our veterans come home to the States, they're kind of making a break. And we have to help them make that transition and really try and deal with those things that they've seen over in the war zone and learn how to live with them on a day-to-day basis. And, again, find their new normal.
To amplify what Secretary Hale's saying, he's right on point in that, and that is how our program kind of morphed from basically a horse wellness program when we first started out as an outgrowth of our 4-H program, which was very successful for kids. We started recognizing, and I'm former Special Forces, so I started recognizing that one of the things that the young men and women coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan had was a lack of mission, a lack of purpose in many respects. As Cabinet Secretary Hale said, they had a different kind of normal now, and nothing was put in front of them. He has programs that are available to them, and what we ended up doing was we basically decided that the program was beyond just horsemanship and horse riding. It became a skill set restructuring program where we could take the skill sets, and we knew what they were because most of our cowboys are veterans too that help and assist in our instructional program. But what we said was, what we were faced with was having to deal with guys that were, at one point, they were a bad Marine, or they were just a butt-kicking Army commando or a Ranger or something like that, and now they were a number at the VA, and they felt a little lost by that. So what we did was, what we do on our ranch is we say, listen, what's the last good thing you remember you knew how to do? And 9 times out of 10, the guy will say, hey, I was a combat patrolling was the last, I mean, I was good at it. Or he'll say, hey, I ran a machine gun crew. I said, good. What do you remember about that? And they'll tell me, and I say, we're going to teach you how to move cattle. using that. And they look at me and they scratch their head. And I say, what are you talking about? And we use Temple Grandin's references, and we say, here's how we're going to do this. Do you remember Fields of Fire? You remember interlocking Fields of Fire? Why don't you go in front of another guy's weapon system? Well, because you'll get killed. Well, the same thing. You don't ride in front of another cowboy. When you leave a patrol, when I send you out on a quote-unquote recon for those calves and that mama calf that may be over in that other draw there, when you come back, you don't just come in any place you want. You come back in to the patrol / circle where you left the patrol. So all the cowboy principles and technical things that cowboys do on a daily basis, they did in patrolling or setting up a machine gun position or something like that. So we take those skills, no matter what they are, and then we show them how to integrate them. Once they get to see that they can do something as obtuse in maybe their minds as working cattle and being a superior horse person or doing ranching, things on the ranching and vaccinating cattle or branding, then they turn around in their mind, they say, if I can do this, and I've seen now how to do that with this skill set, I can do anything. You know, I can be a radio talk show hostess if I want.
Right.
Well, there is a really kind of, it seems like a very natural connection between veterans and the cowboy life, because you're very much working with your body, you're outdoors, you're in a disciplined situation, and so on. I mean, it seems like people... the veterans whom you've brought into the program take to it very naturally.
They do. Most of our men and women that come on board, and we have our first female graduate, by the way.
Yay.
I guess we have to change the subtitle "Cowgirl" up because she did very well. She came in and rocketed right past a half a dozen other fellas. Cow people up? I don't think so. But you're right, and not only that, but as Secretary Hale had mentioned earlier, there are certain precepts and principles that they adhere to, leadership principles. And if you remember the James Owen piece that's on horsesforheroes.org on our website, Cowboy ethics. Live each day with courage. Take pride in your work. Always finish what you start. Be tough but fair. When you make a promise, keep it. Ride for the brand. Talk less, say more. Remember that some things are not for sale, and know where to draw the line. And this is a template that you could take right over top of the warrior ethos and ethics, and that they understand and that they get, that they get inherently now.
Well, I mean, it applies to almost anything.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that's one of the things we try and get them to realize when they come home is, you know, you haven't missed this part of your life. What you've done is you've taken yourself from 17 years old and you've added a world of experiences to your life, and now you're just making another step.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, feeling down on themselves, down on their situation. I've lost this. You know, I'll never get it back. Well, you don't have to look at it that way. You have to look at it from the idea that you are now building upon those experiences, because that's what each and every one of us has to do every day of our lives.
Tell us about your own military background.
Okay. I grew up outside of an Air Force base up in southern Illinois, a little town called Muscoota, which was right off the runway of Scott Air Force Base. So most of my friends when I was a kid growing up, the kids from the base came to my hometown school district. So I grew up around the military, you know, during Vietnam, towards the end of Vietnam. I'm called kind of a spanner type of a generation, because I graduated from high school in the mid-70s, then went on into college and came in. So, you know,
too
young for Vietnam, but I was very close to them. You know, my brothers, you know, still had their draft cards. My oldest brother was a couple of numbers away from being, taken in 72, 73, towards the end of the war. So it very much was impacting my life. All of my adult, my friends' fathers had just come back from Vietnam out at the base, so I kind of experienced those stories. And mainly, watching everything that was going on, I wanted to go in the military, and I wanted to fly. So I spent 28 years flying for the Air Force. Again, like Rick, I was blessed to be in the special operations side and probably dropped him on his head a couple of times out of the back of my airplanes.
I thought that was you up there.
It probably was. It probably was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Smooth is not my middle name, so I'll be the first to admit that.
Some of those Nap of the Earth flights,
exactly.
That was you making
exactly.
me go into the little bag there, wasn't
you
it?
You betcha. You betcha. And as long as you took it out, we'll leave it at that. So I got to spend 28 years doing that as a pilot in the Air Force. Retired in 2008 and came back to New Mexico to work for Lockheed because I've been coming out here for training out at Kirtland since about 1982. So it was a very, very familiar environment for me. I loved it out here. We love the people. So it was a good transition for us.
Now, did you yourself make use of veteran services?
My first encounter with the Department of Veteran Services was I was just starting out getting a business started of my own. The business I have incorporated is called Higher Calling Aviation. And much like what Rick does with the horses, my vision with Higher Calling is to bring veterans in and work with them. If they think they're handicapped and they can't do something they have always wanted to do, there are a lot of programs out there available where we can take a veteran, take anyone, and get them in an aircraft and teach them to fly. Things that they may have thought they could never do, much like breaking a horse.
Right.
You can do the same thing with aircraft. In fact, one of the deputy secretaries for the Veterans Administration, Tammy Duckworth, was a UH-60 pilot in Iraq and was hit in the nose. Her aircraft was hit in the nose by a rocket-propelled grenade. Tammy has a limited use of one arm. She's got one leg is gone and very limited use of the other leg. She is back flying through a program very similar to what I want to do.
Is that called getting back on the horse?
Exactly.
That's
exactly right.
Getting back in the left seat.
You bet. You bet. So, and that's, I think all the groups that are looking at that, that's what we're trying to do is try and build programs that, impact the veteran and get them back on the horse. Get them back in the cockpit. Get them back on the bicycle. Just like when we were kids, mom and dad made us get back on the bicycle after we fell off.
Right.
Because they knew that was the best way to help us, be successful.
We're talking to Cabinet Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services, Tim Hale, and Rick Iannucci and Nancy DeSantis of Horses for Heroes, the Cowboy Up program. Now, the Cowboy Up program is doing some very interesting work. In addition to training people to be cowboys, there's a whole restorative justice program.
Yes, I was also a United States Marshal for 21 years and did some investigative work for the U.S. Attorney's Office and spent a good chunk of my life in the justice system. When we first started out, we had the opportunity to, one of our instructors actually came on board with us, and he had the opportunity to do some community service. And the judge called me in and said, I hear this fellow's been involved in your program and this and that. And I said, yes, sir, he has. He said, well, I'm signing him over to you. And I went, okay. He said, he's yours for the term of his probationary community service portion. And I said, gladly, Your Honor. And from there, I had another judge in Los Alamos County. We had one of our veterans that needed some community service up there. And these are for DUI-type offenses and that type of thing. But in lieu of jail time or in lieu of them doing other things on their probation, it was an opportunity for us, and I recognized it as an opportunity for us to step up and say, hey, let us work with this program. Give them to me, and let us see what we can do with them. And so far, we've had three or four successful situations of restorative justice. In fact, believe it or not, we stretch out all the way into Nevada now. We had a judge from Cook County, Nevada, just sign one of their veterans over to us. He's a two-tour Marine who's now working with us, who worked with us throughout the summer, went back to handle an old DUI that happened to him when he was back in that area. And we were able to get him to save him an 18-month prison sentence. So there was nothing to be served by sending this young Marine to prison in Nevada for 18 months.
Yeah, which is so toxic. And
exactly.
Nothing good comes of
it. Especially when he could serve that time with us and to be much more empowering and to give him a skill and to turn his life around and be able to do that. What we guarantee is that they're going to get back the type of person that they thought they were putting in.
And that's a great segue to, you know, New Mexico just opened up their first veterans court just last week down in Albuquerque. The veterans court is, again, very much what Rick's talking about, is that court specifically, if a veteran is identified in the early parts of the process of being arrested and incarcerated, as they're even going through the judgment process, they can be diverted. It's called a jail diversion program. They can be diverted over to the veterans court, and they will be handled as a veteran. They'll take a look at what was his background. Is this person suffering from post-traumatic stress issues? You know, is this what has happened to this individual? Is this as a result of the situation that, you know, he got into by serving his country? If so, then we offer an alternative method. Instead of going and doing straight hard time in jail, it may be putting him into a program like what Rick and Nancy have, or something else, to again identify that this person has served their country, served it honorably, and we want to do everything we can to let them continue to be a good, solid, upright citizen. So they're identified early, and, you know, depending on the nature of the crime, they can be put into the Veterans Court system to, again, try and work them out through the system.
Now, are there enough programs like Horses for Heroes and the Cowboy Up program to accommodate all the people?
That's what we'll very soon see because, again, the court's been in, open for about 2 weeks, and we're just going to start seeing the effects of that. I believe that the people will step up and offer these programs across the state. Rick's talked about some of his contacts, you know, in adjoining states, you know, throughout New Mexico. You know, we work with a program up at Angel Fire where we bring in a number of different groups to work through PTSD issues. So we've got a lot of contacts out there that we can work with the courts to try and make sure that people can get into a valid program. You know, it really came to a head last year. We passed a bill at the last session called the Ellis Bill. The Ellis Bill is there to give law enforcement trainees at the New Mexico Academy additional training on identifying veterans who possibly may have PTSD or other people who may have some type of a mental health issue so that a law enforcement personnel can identify them early and know how to start handling that situation to bring it down to a different level as opposed to letting it escalate to a point where someone gets killed. And it's named after a veteran named Ken Ellis, where that situation happened. And it's tragic when that happens.
Well, it's tragic when it happens whether the person's a veteran or not.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, we're very proud of the fact that, issues like that are being brought to the forefront through the Veterans Department and through a lot of the people who work with all those different veterans programs. So, you know, the people in the communities here are really stepping up to the plate. And I think when you ask, will there be enough programs, I think people will really come out and try and make sure that we've got the programs to handle those types of situations.
And I see a new day dawning, too, with police agencies. I had a very interesting conversation with a tremendous individual, Gordon Eden, who's the new director of the state police, former United States Marshal and a wonderful man. And he and I talked about perhaps sending a pilot team of state police officers out to our place so they can even meet with some of these veterans and interact with them a little bit and see what it is we do and talk to some of our social workers and our the people that work in our program a little bit about what goes on and what happens. What's the dynamics? What's the physics of this as they start going through a confrontation? Because it can literally go from 0 to 60 in a microsecond, in a minisecond. That is how the operational tempo was in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's what they were forced to do in a war where there was no rear. There was only a front. The war was all around them. That from the time they got up in the morning till the time they closed their eyes at night, the war was all around them. There was no rear area in the rear with the gear, used to be the old joke. And this new conflict with improvised explosive device and vehicle-borne improvised explosive devices and things like that, even our truck drivers are subject to it. One of the women in our program was blown clear out of her the cockpit of her truck. You may have met her when you came out to the ranch, Christy. But so it's these types of things that that we're trying to address at every level, at a community level, as Cabinet Secretary Hale is speaking about.
One of the inevitable consequences of that kind of experience and trauma is in a lot of people substance abuse. And when you talk about situations going from 0 to 60 in a microsecond, a lot of time you're talking about alcohol or other kinds of drugs that are used as basically to kind of keep the pain at bay on the one hand, but also really affect people's judgments. How do you, I mean, let's talk about both you guys' program, the Horses for Heroes, and the Veterans Administration deal with the very huge problem of substance abuse and its consequences.
Right. You know, with the VA, you know, they look very closely at, you know, again, what's the psychological makeup of one of the veterans coming back in. If they, you know, come in to talk to someone about the program, that is one of the first issues they will try and address, you know. Do you have the propensity to being a substance abuser? Are you a substance abuser? And they try and deal with that first, because it will mask.
Do people admit it?
They will. Mm-hmm. If they've come in for help, then 90% of the time I would say they would be willing to get help for the entire package, because they want the pain to go away. That's why they've become substance abusers. But they, you know, recognize at that point the substance abuse is not doing them any good. It's, you know, the one that I worry about is the one who is not willing to get any help and is abusing. That's the person we really have to worry about.
Right.
And we'll probably have the more chance encounter with law enforcement.
Right, exactly.
Many of our veterans are coming out of the VA's wonderful program down there that George Marinell's running, called the STAR program. Melissa Middleton, excuse me, and George Marnell through the VA down in Albuquerque have OIF, OEF veterans in a program called STAR, and we've received some of those individuals. That's an abuse program. We find that exactly what Secretary Hale's saying, they have to want it first. Once they want it, then we're basically, I guess we would be grad school for the STAR program, because many of our veterans, we get them at the tail end of STAR. They become aware of us, and one of their buddies who's a post-STAR graduate goes down to the STAR program and says, hey, come along with me. I got just a thing for you. They'll bring them up, and so on and so forth, and that causes a multiplication for us.
Yeah, and you know what Rick alluded to right there, to me, is the key to reintegrating every veteran. Someone, a battle buddy, a wingman, stepping up beside them and being willing to walk beside them, walk through whatever it is without being judgmental about it. You know, in most cases, being able to say, buddy, I've been in your shoes, I've walked where you've walked, but I'm going to walk through this with you. You know, most of the problems with veterans that we see manifest themselves, you know, a little over 6 months after they've been back in the States. You know, if we can get them a battled buddy hookup in that first 6 months, you know, especially if it's a neighbor, if it's a friend who was there with them, if we can get them connected to those, it's not a program, if we can get them connected to people, then chances are they won't continue that slide if they've already started it. We've got to catch them right off the bat. Military Order Purple Heart has an initiative out there to try and get ex-Marines or people with a Purple Heart to walk beside one of those new veterans when they come in the gate at the Sunport, just to hand them a card and say, hey, when you need me, I'm here. I'm here for a cup of coffee. I'm here to talk to you. I am ready to step up. We need that across the communities. We need that in our churches. We need that, you know, in every different group, to be able to reach out to our veterans and catch them right at the beginning, because we can prevent so many issues if we can give them battle buddy right off the top.
And one of the things we hear over and over again is veterans who've been through really rough stuff are so much more comfortable with other people who've been through things than they are with civilians who they just feel can't understand them on some level.
Well, that's the beauty of our program. When a veteran gets off a horseback, that's part of it. He's just experienced something pretty magnificent anytime you're on horseback or just getting away in the fresh air for the day. But he gets off, and we've got cowboys that were veterans that turn around and volunteers. We've got Chuck Franco, who's a Blue Star dad, the first gentleman. Mm-hmm. He's standing there to give somebody a cup of coffee, one of our guys, and say, a cup of cowboy coffee, and say, welcome home. And it's that camaraderie.
Cowboy coffee.
Yeah, that strong stuff we serve you at the house. You've been there.
I love it.
But in any event, and you know, or we've got veterans like Carl Hawkins, who two tours in Vietnam, Purple Heart recipient, worked on every major ranch from Texas all the way through New Mexico, standing there to hand somebody a cup of coffee, put an arm around them and said, how you doing? Now, we don't care if they talk or not talk. It's the fact that we're there for them. And we have guys that say to us, hey, listen, man, I talk to you guys more in an hour and a half on a Sunday than I spent a year and a half in the VA talking. He says, I'm glad that you've opened the door. So that's why we feel we're very complimentary to what the VA is doing down there. But the other thing about community that Secretary Hale mentioned is very important is we offer the ranching community. We've got 9 program partner ranches scattered throughout the state of New Mexico. We've just added one in Homer, Alaska, and one in Great Falls, Montana, that have basically come on as our quote-unquote program partners. So we have established a ranching community that's built around respect, love, loyalty, and all the good things that a community like that can offer everyone that's out there. And that's the kind of community of love and honor and respect that Tim's saying we need to surround these men and women with to let them know that they've landed, they've had a soft landing.
Right.
We're talking to Rick Iannucci and Nancy DeSantis from Horses for Heroes, the Cowboy Up program here in New Mexico, and Tim Hale, Cabinet Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services. Nancy, you have something. We've barely talked about women's veterans who are an ever-growing part of the veterans population, and you've got a program of, what is it, women's retreats?
We do women retreats for veterans.
Yeah.
Right now it's a day retreat, not a sleepover, because we don't have our accommodations just yet on there, and though there's a big request from our women participants. And what we do is we do groundwork activities with the horses. They're unmounted activities. And that type of work allows to go deeper. And what happens is you work with the horse, you give them a task to do, and it opens up, let's say, their issues or what's up on the surface for them. And you're able to find that issue more quickly because the horse doesn't let you lie, basically.
So what kind of things come up? I mean, women veterans are facing some different issues than their male counterparts.
Yes. Issues ranging from PTSD all the way to their time in the military service, the struggle between female and male in the workforce, just as far as their rank,
right,
and all the way up to sexual trauma.
Yeah. And, I mean, one of the things I have read, for some reason, I have gotten so many stories lately about women who've been sexually assaulted by their fellow soldiers in the military, sometimes commanding officers, sometimes people of higher rank, and some of them have been terribly, not only traumatized, but injured, and they can't report it. There's this whole culture of not being able to get justice for what are essentially felonies against them.
Exactly. Oftentimes, they'll lose their place in their rank.
Yeah. And so, working with horses, is that a first step toward healing that kind of thing?
Yes, because that's the kind of issues that we go and delve deeply into and that we quickly get to. The type of work that we do is equine-assisted therapy, also equine-assisted learning or coaching, let's say. So our job as facilitators, I work with a great friend of ours, Judy Schneider, who is a licensed social worker and has been for over 25 years. And we, our job is to ask the right questions while the participant is working with the animals. And for instance, let me just give you an example. You ask, the horse is doing something in particularly, and you say, well, what's going on with that horse? And sometimes the person will just say exactly what it is, and then oftentimes they'll end up projecting, oh, that horse is angry. That horse is sad. So that gives an opportunity for Judy to delve deeper to work out those issues.
Oh, that's fascinating.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So if you could do multi-day retreats, you could go even deeper.
Right.
And I guess you're trying to build a bunkhouse.
We are. We are. Just for that and for our whole program when we go out branding and gathering cattle and what have you. But it's necessary because we do need that team room to sit there and dive into all this.
Yeah. Now, just on the subject of the bunkhouse, ladies and gentlemen, if anybody out there is a contractor or constructor wants to donate materials or time or anything like that.
That's right. We want to have this place built by spring, not because we've had guests living in our house and sleeping on our couch since April, but we do it out of love. No, they deserve better, and we're not asking for a big place. We've got Bill Agnew, the local architect, has been kind enough to help us with a drawing of about a 968 square foot team room with some adjoining bunk rooms and with a porch that goes all the way around so that they can sit and rock with each other and watch the sunset and talk to each other or not talk to each other.
I think so much of the healing that goes on is not, I mean, with all great respect to the shrinks in the audience right now, is not really in the shrink's office. It's in that place of nature and being heard in a place of friendship.
Right.
Exactly.
That connection.
That connection is absolutely essential.
Yeah. Now, Rick Iannucci, you've got some other programs, and I want to give you a chance to talk about what else is going on.
Oh, we had a great year this year, and you can go on horsesforheroes.org and go into our Cowboy Up blog, and basically we're a transparent organization. You can go back to Veterans Day of 2009 when we did our first cowboy clinic, but we've got some
and see a lot of pictures of people and cows and horses.
Well, there you go. That's our guys out there doing their job. We just we've just developed a wonderful partnership with the Laguna Indians. That's and a wonderful a pair of father-son team, John and Stuart Romero, who started the Cedillo Cattle Association out there and took us in as program partners because they believed in what we were doing, and they love the work we were doing with some of our Native Americans. They're a good partner with us. We've worked all through the fall with them, helping. We brought our whole team and our whole veterans crew out there, working cattle with them, branding, shipping and sorting and doing all kinds of things. And it was really a wonderful experience, and it's a wonderful partnership to be able to go out and ride on 100,000 acres of Laguna Pueblo that most people never get a chance to walk on, let alone ride beautiful horses on. The other thing we're doing, speaking about our Native Americans, is we had our first Native American veteran graduate. He's an amputee. He's a Navajo, Diné, from the Arizona-New Mexico area. And he came to us, and we started working with him. He came out of one of the STAR programs. He rocketed through the program, and he wanted to get back and give back to his community. And he wanted to get back into ranching. And with this kind of determination, we had to do everything in our as St. Francis said, do what is possible, not what is probable.
Yeah.
So we jumped on that and did that right away. So we helped him. We attended through the New Mexico Cattle Growers Association. We went through some livestock schools and NMSU, got him schooled up a little bit, helped him work with USDA grants to get some fencing. And then in September on Labor Day, when we were done working with Cedillo that day, we came back and we gifted him 5 bred cows, a bull, and a squeeze chute. that he could take back to the reservation. And basically he called it, what did I get here? Rancher starter kit. Okay. So that's what we gifted them. But that's only part of the sustainability. See, in 18 months, he's going to turn around and take those calves that will now be yearlings and give them back to us so that we can train the next crop of would-be ranchers and people that have that proclivity or people that are that far along in the program. The other couple things that we're doing, obviously you heard about our women's retreats. We're looking to do something similar. We're on the drawing board now with a wonderful woman, Karen Kelly, who's up doing Tim's project up there, the wellness program up in Angel Fire. We're trying to do that same type of thing with for couples. So we might be involved in that this coming spring. We're also working with a project we call the Compadre Project, and we named it after the Las Campanas Compadres, who are partners. We have a quadriplegic quadriplegic veteran who's in a wheelchair, Eric Shy, Sergeant Eric Shy, who took a sniper shot in Mosul and was basically unable to move his limbs, arms, and legs and whatnot. By the way, he's on session number 10 now of our program. So he's been riding since June. And through the graciousness of the compadres up there, they allow us to work in their facility because they have the Hoyer hoist and the special special saddle and a horse that's trained specifically to work with those kinds of issues and special needs.
Right.
So we're doing that with Eric, and we're very, very proud of him. We've just started with an airman, a Pave Hawk gunner from Alaska, Master Sergeant Joe Schneider up in Homer, Alaska. We'll have our first off base, our both first satellite base up in Homer, Alaska for veterans from that area, a place for them to go to when they're finished our program down here. And, of course, you know we're working with the Navajos out there on that side of the world.
So. Now, all these programs are amazing. I mean, what you guys are doing, we keep having you on the air year after year because it's such a model for what other people might do, and it's such an inspiration. Just, I mean, listening to what you're doing with women veterans and what you're doing with all these other people and the essential healing power of community and being in nature and being with people who've experienced what you've experienced. This is something that, I mean, you guys are sort of piecing it together, partly because I think you've got some sustenance from your work in the past, but these are programs that need to be funded.
Yeah. We started this out of my retirement.
Yeah, exactly.
And then some donations that we get, and some every once in a while a corporation will step in, and Wells Fargo and Century did the women's retreats, helped us with that because we feed everybody too. See, so.
But I mean, the point is that for these things to be more than a beautiful model here and there, but to be the way that people mm-hmm. heal and get to the next step of their lives, we're talking funding.
Sure, and that's the part that we work on at the state and the federal level, but the hard part with working with the big organizations like the state government and the federal government, when you start going down that trail, you start talking years, whereas if the community can come together and help work with these things, you know, we can provide a little bit of help, you know, with state funding. We help sponsor the Angel Fire program that Rick talked about. And that one is getting its own wheels, and as a non-for-profit, they are taking off and working forward. That is, to me, the model that we really need to look at. But at the same time, being very aware that we have a lot of ability within the state and the federal government to bring some things to bear, but it takes our funding process a lot longer. You know, for us to fund something at the state, you're talking usually about 2 years. And when I look at, I've known Rick and Nancy for about 11 months now, and when I see the expansion that they've been able to make with their program, I can't touch that as a state agency or as a federal agency.
Right.
You know, individual.
But in the long run.
In the long run, we all work towards more of them.
I mean, these are anomalous, beautiful things, but it's like, because the question, there's always this question of what is most effective, and a lot of the times the answer is small community organizations.
Right.
but you've got a federal or state bureaucracy, and it would be really nice if the federal and state bureaucracies, instead of having 10 layers of middlemen, could simply fund these small community organizations.
Oh, you bet. You know, that's, you know, I know a number of the different state organizations that I work with in our national association. That's kind of what the model that the state organizations are trying to go for is almost like a benevolence fund at a church, where when you see something that's really good and is an effective program, that you can then apply funds to it. Those are the things where we're all across numerous states trying to work towards right now, because you're right. There are so many different programs, and we even teach that, you know, to our the people who work at the veteran service organizations. The VA knows it. You know, every individual who goes to the battle zone goes in with their own background, because they are individuals. What happens to them over there will affect each one of us differently. So a cookie cutter healing approach won't work.
Right.
Each of us will have to have a little bit different modality, and that's the hard part to program on a large scale basis. And that's something that we as a society are wrestling with right now, is how do we find that individual care for each one of those soldiers who comes back and make sure that they get the right help, because nobody across the system wants anyone to fall through the gaps.
That's right. Tim Hale, do you see other programs around the state that are also effective, like we've been talking about Cowboy Up?
Absolutely. Cowboy Up, you know, the Henderson House through the YWCA down in Albuquerque, a phenomenal, again, model for the nation, where women veterans can come in off the streets, especially if they have children with them. One of a kind program that was started here in New Mexico, you know, helped out by the Henderson Construction Company to get them up and started, and we've now got, you know, numerous women living there with their children, going to a community school, getting the help they need to be effective. Veterans Integration Center down in Albuquerque, Mesilla Valley of Hope down in Las Cruces, there are groups all around the state stepping up to help out the most needy of the veterans. Those programs are so great.
Very interesting. And again, it will be very interesting to see if our tax dollars could be diverted to funding those things instead of just, well, massive bureaucracies.
And I think you'd be surprised when you start peeling back the onion on the state budget. You know, through Human Services Division, through Department of Health, there are a lot of organizations out there that are working exactly the same, the things we're talking about, and there are state funding lines through the Behavioral Health Consortium, those sorts of things, that are really trying to put the money into the programs at the right place. They may not all come through Department of Veterans Services, but there are groups within the state in the healthcare arena that are working directly to help the veterans.
So before we go, Rick, you have a Rick and Nancy have a dinner coming up to which the public is cordially invited.
We have a cowboy Christmas coming up, Mary Charlotte. It's the second annual one that we've done. This year we're going to be at the Hilton of Santa Fe over there on Sandoval Street. It's a cowboy Christmas dinner and dance. We're going to feature this year Joe West and Friends featuring Sharon Gilchrist. Those of you who are locals know who Joe West is for sure. He's the Santa Fe Reporters group of the year, always, every year. He used to be the Santa Fe All-Stars.
Right.
But he's bringing Sharon Gilchrist in, and they're going to be doing the honors for the entertainment. It's cocktails at 6, silent auction, dinner, then a live auction and some dancing. We're going to have some wonderful live auction items this year. We have Star York, the renowned sculptor from Abiquiu, is going to be donating a piece. Tom Ross. We have Dino Cornet, and several other people are going to be donating some wonderful items. So, also, one final thing that we have that we just got a call today is Billy Flores is donating, from DM Safaris, is donating a big game hunt in Africa. It could be a photo safari or a gun safari, however they'd like to take
wow.
it. Two to four people. And then when they bring a trophy home, if they care to, Billy will, up to $500 per hunter, donate a shoulder mount for that hunt. So,
what kind of game are they hunting?
I'm not sure what they're hunting. They're big game.
Nothing endangered, I hope.
No, no, they don't. They don't do any of that. And it could be a photo safari if a group wants to take it that way too. But it's in Africa, and
wow,
and that's big.
For more information, you can go to horsesforheroes.org. I want to thank all of you for being here, Rick Iannucci and Nancy DeSantis of the Horses for Heroes program and Cowboy Up. And once again, horsesforheroes.org. Tim Hale, Cabinet Secretary of the New Mexico Department of Veterans Services, thanks for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thanks for letting me be here.